You are listening to Job Steps, and my name is Salvatore Payne, and with me as always is my good buddy, Dr. Playoff G. G, how we doing, baby?
Salvatore, can't complain. Down to the last few days of winter break here before the spring semester starts.
Oof.
Getting re-energized for that spring semester. How you doing, man?
I mean, I'm doing great. You know, I'm still on sabbatical, so, you know, I just watched a lot of NBA yesterday. I listened to some NBA on the radio the day before while making a stew.
You know, just going the radio route, huh?
Yeah, you know, I was making a stew, just had an NBA game going on the radio. Highly recommend it. Very idyllic.
Love it. So I'm guessing that was a Knicks game. Who do they have doing the radio broadcast?
Okay, this is very embarrassing. I forget the guy's name. He's been doing it forever.
So not as iconic, though, as Mike Breen and Walt Clyde.
I mean, iconic for the New York faithful.
Wow. And you can't remember his name. That's embarrassing.
Well, I would have to say, like, I mean, iconic in, like, he's a radio guy. And I can't say I'm listening to 20 radio games a year. I probably listen to, all in all, probably 3 to 5. All mostly right. While I'm driving.
Okay. Yeah. Fair
enough. Ever listen to the NBA on the radio guy?
You know, I got to say, I don't. I can't remember. I think the last time I listened to the NBA on the radio, it would have been spring 2018, first round of the playoffs, Bucks-Celtics. I think it might have been game 7 when the Celtics beat the Bucks.
Wow.
Game 7, first round. 2018, Sal.
Look at that memory on you, guy. Look at the big brain on Brad.
Wait, what? What's that from?
You're killing me. Pulp Fiction.
Okay, that's right. All right, that was the reference you used for Brad Stevens, that's right.
Yeah.
See, think about how long we've been doing this podcast now.
Yeah, we've had so many references, we've forgotten like half of them.
Exactly.
We have whole segments of the show, I don't remember what the genesis was or what they were.
Well, speaking of, Sal, I got to put an end to this banner here. Are you ready for some NBA Cliffs Notes?
Let's do it.
All right, Sal. So, this is the part of the show. Notice how I'm mimicking your fast break intro.
I see.
There.
See, this is a gimmick that we still have going.
This is the NBA Cliffs Notes, also known as Tokens for Sal's Pillbox, known throughout barcades, all throughout the continental U.S. All right, so as everyone knows who listens to this pod, Sal is an NBA elitist. He thinks the NBA begins and ends with Madison Square Garden. So this is the part of the show where we sort of give him some, you know, those little nuggets, some tokens to put in his pillbox about the small market goings-on across the NBA. Sal,
yes.
Have you taken
That's right.
a peek? Have you taken a peek recently at the Western Conference standings?
I sure have. In preparation, but I have been keeping track of the whole league. You know, I mean, I think this is a bit overstated that I just watch the Knicks. I mean, primarily watch the Knicks, but I follow the rest of the league pretty closely.
Sal, the Western Conference standings are small market porn right now. So
yeah.
The Denver Nuggets and the Grizzlies are really starting to separate themselves from the pack. I think they're going to be going back and forth for those 1 and 2 seeds all year long, all the way through April. Pelicans feel a little secure in number 3, but Sal, the team that I've had the most fun watching this season by far and away, the Sacramento Kings. We did a pod 4 games into the season when we had talked about the Kings on our preview pod about how like they were like a borderline most interesting team for us, right? But, you know, the Kings are the Kings. And after the first 4 games, they were 0-4. Since that time, their record is 24-14. Sal, how much of the Sacramento Kings have you watched this year?
I mean, once they started lighting the beam, I was all in. So we missed a couple episodes when they first got hot, and I had it centered around the beam. So
I wanted
to talk about the beam. So my theory here, they started playing well once the beam got involved.
Wow, I have never been more disappointed about having to reschedule a pod than I am hearing this news right now. So
I had a fast break built around the beam. I had it was going to be all beam, an all beam episode.
That is incredible. But beam aside, while sure, a lot of the credit may be due to lighting the beam, they also got a couple pretty good players on that team, Sal. Domantas Sabonis, currently on a double-double streak. It's now it stands at 20. Now, you look at the people ahead of him, and it's like kind of impressive, kind of not. Like, Russell Westbrook has 2 of the longest double-double streaks in the history of the NBA. But Jokic is up there, too. But the guy that I have the most fun watching is De'Aaron Fox. It feels like he's taking a leap this year. I think he should, you know, be an all-star this year for the first time in his career. The guy is as clutch as it gets. It reminds me of watching DeMar DeRozan. Whenever he gets to a spot in the mid-range, it's just a guaranteed bucket. So, thoughts on De'Aaron Fox?
Yeah, I mean, he's good. Him and Sabonis good. Like, I remember De'Aaron Fox was about to be traded for Randall. I'm glad that did not happen, that we didn't go down that route. I'm not going to rain on the Kings parade with my more pessimistic or just kind of general feelings about, like, what the ceiling is on this team, but I think this is a great story, good for the league, good for Sacramento. The last time we had a pod, we did our power rankings for the Western Conference, and we both had them in the bottom tier, and I think that's still right, even though I know by record they're playing great, so I don't want to bring my kind of pessimism in, but I think if Sabonis and Fox are your top two guys, I think this is about the ceiling that you could expect. They try hard,
okay. They
play really well. What I would say is the West is wide open. So
if
you told me that they somehow snuck into the second round, I could see it. I don't think it's likely, but I could see the scenario where that happens just based on how the West looks this year.
Yeah, a couple things there. So I'm glad you mentioned that about Fox and Sabonis playing together. If you go back to last year, whenever the Kings made that the Halliburton trade, and yes, I know, like, just getting, the Kings are just getting crushed across the NBA landscape. Like, how can you trade a player as young as Halliburton, as good as Halliburton? What the hell are you doing? And while, yes, I understood that, I tend to agree, too, that I didn't think it was the best trade they could have made. But alongside that, I was thinking, but isn't it going to be kind of fun watching Sabonis and Fox play together? Anyway, but, like, to your point about the standings, if the standings held as they are and they're playing the Dallas Mavericks in the first round of the playoffs, Kings would have home court. Who are you picking in that series, Sal?
Oh, that's really tough. I think I'm going in the Mavs, but that's a 7-game series and I'm going to go back and forth on really thinking about it. But to your point, I think I would think about them, you know, against a bunch of different teams that might end up in that 5 spot, you know? So yeah, I, and also what I would say too is, like, this is going to sound bizarre because they're in Sacramento and the Knicks are in New York, but I think about, like, what their front office did in a lot of ways, similar to what the Knicks have done. They just want to be in the playoffs. They just want to be watchable. Yeah. They just want to be good, right? So, like, if that's the case, then trading for Sabonis, I think, is actually a good move, and especially when you compare it to the Minnesota Timberwolves, where they also just wanted to be in the playoffs and be good, and they didn't have to give up everything to just be a good team. And, in fact, they're better than the Timberwolves right now, you know, so it's hard to criticize them. Would you take the Kings?
So, I mean, here's the thing. Yes, the Dallas Mavericks obviously have Luka. The Dallas Mavericks, though, are not as good of a team as they were last year.
No.
Whenever they made it to the...
Especially at the start of last season, they had Kristaps too, which everyone forgets about.
Yeah. Yeah. So, they're at this point, they have a significantly worse roster than they did last year. We all know the history of crazy high usage rate teams, right? Meaning centered around one player. I love the term that came out of last year. The heliocentric teams, right? It's as heliocentric as it gets right now around Luka. There's not a good history of all of what happens to those teams once they make the playoffs. So I think I would lean towards Sacramento. It's like, if they have home court, those fans are going to be absolutely bonkers. It's the longest playoff drought in professional sports history, which is crazy. It's going back to the Mike Bibby Kings, which doesn't seem that long ago to me, sadly. But yeah, I mean, I think, like, obviously, some couple things are going to probably change by that point. I think the Golden State Warriors could sneak into that 5 spot, maybe all the way up to the 4. I think the Clippers are still more likely to me to finish higher than the Dallas Mavericks, but again, it's all centers around health. So I don't know. Yeah, if the Kings hold steady at 4 and they get to play the Mavericks, I think I'm going to go with the Kings. But if they're playing somebody like Golden State or the Clippers, I just don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
All right, Sal, another team as we continue our small market journey here. Sal, you had to know it was coming. We're going to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder. Just closed out an East Coast road trip going 3-1, and that one loss was by 1 point to the Miami Heat when they shot 40 for 40 from the free throw line, Sal, 40 for 40. That's how close they were to being 4-0 on that East Coast road trip. Sal, We talk about, if you look at the standings, we're talking about the top half of the standings in the West. If we look at the bottom half of like the playoff play-in standings, I got to tell you, Sal, the Thunder are making the play-in game. Right now, they're half game out of being tied for eighth, right? The Jazz, Timberwolves, and Blazers are all right there, 8 through 10. Oh, 9 games back, the Thunder are 9.5 games back. Like I mentioned, I think the Golden State Warriors are going to continue going up, but who the hell knows what's going to happen to the Clippers? So I think the Thunder are guaranteed to be wind up playing in that playing game. And by that time, Sal, I got to tell you, I think there's a strong possibility that we could be watching the Oklahoma City Thunder in the playoffs this year.
Okay, so I have two questions about this. So first off, so we're just looking at the standings today. It's 7, 8, 9, 10. It's Warriors, Jazz, Wolves, Blazers, right? So you're basically making the bet that the Thunder are probably going to jump either the Blazers or the Jazz, you know, once yes. This kind of goes down. Okay, so you think that the Thunder are going to jump the Blazers and Jazz, and it won't be the Suns or Lakers, and in fact, both the Suns and the Lakers. You think you would take the Thunder out of those three teams making the playoffs?
Yeah, so wait, so you're saying, first of all, the Thunder are absolutely going to finish ahead of the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm not sure if you've watched them this year. They're a train.
I've watched them. They're not good, but they're like right there in terms of wins and losses. You know, so they're not good. We're going to talk about the Suns later. That's one of my things, but I'm just making sure. So I'm not saying you're wrong, and I think that might surprise people. I'm just surprised. And my second question was really going to be like, do you want that to happen? Knowing that next year they get Chet back, do you really want them to be like the 10 or 9 seed, or would you in your heart of hearts just rather them be the 12 seed? You know, they put in a really good run at the end, much like maybe the Suns had in the bubble years ago. And then you get a quality player, maybe even you sneak up into that second spot, which would be great, and then you go all in next year. But you'd really rather them just be the 10 seed?
Sal, I'm glad you asked me that question. Within the last 2 weeks, there's been a turning point. I think, especially once we had the Chet injury before the season started, I was all in on saying, like, hey, one more year of, you know, not trying to win. That's all it takes. Just one more year. You watch this team, and they're so much freaking fun to watch. And over the last 2 weeks, especially, it was actually that Miami Heat game that I was watching, and it was a turning point in that game. We're going into that game. As it was unfolding, I thought I wanted the Thunder to lose to continue to, you know, help their draft position. And over the course of that game, it's like, oh my God, I want them to win this game. And I haven't, it's been, you know, that way ever since then, as they've gone on this winning streak since then. Just kind of manhandling the Sixers and Nets in the process. Part of the reason why is the development of Giddy and Jalen Williams. I'm not sure if you heard this or not, but Bill Simmons coined the nickname fucking awesome Jalen Williams for Jalen Williams.
I heard. Question
for you, Sal. The Knicks could have drafted Jalen, fucking awesome Jalen Williams, but they traded out of that spot instead. How do you feel about that, Sal?
The guy, Jalen Williams, wouldn't have played on the Knicks, so it's fine. I'm maintaining the same point I had on draft night. It doesn't matter. The Knicks were not going to play that player this whole season, so it's totally fine. You need to fire the coach if you want to play Jalen Williams. So, yeah, totally fine in that spot.
All right, so just to finish this point, I think that the Thunder are actually in that prime spot where it's like the most perfect spot to be in as a fan with a rebuilding team, where they're reaching that point where they're good enough to start competing on a nightly basis, and you want them to win, but the expectations are zero. And that is an awesome, awesome, awesome place to be whenever you're watching the youngest team in the NBA.
I get it. I would just rather be just a little more patient for one more year and then just go all in next year, you know, because like what? I mean, because it's not like they're competing for the 8 seed. I mean, they could. They're only 2 games back from the 8 seed. I understand that, or half a game back. But like, they're probably not going to get there, you know, so it's like, well, what? You're going to really just throw away your chances here at the lottery because you're going to play for maybe 1 to 2 extra games? I don't know. I think they might start sitting guys knowing the front office, and I wouldn't blame them for that. I don't care if they really go for it because I know the likelihood doesn't improve that much, but it improves so much more than in years like 5-10 years ago. So, and I'm not convinced about like that the Lakers won't make the playing game, and I think they're going to try and go all in to do it. And then we got to talk about the Suns. I mean, they're 1-9. We have no idea when Booker's coming back, but yeah. We'll get to that later. Let's talk about the Suns later.
Yeah, what I would say, the final point on this, is that whenever you have a player of SGA's caliber, he's going to be a starter in the All-Star game, lock it down. Whenever you've had been, you know,
which is outrageous, by the way. So just let me put this out there. I hate the way that this has all changed. So 5 to 10 years ago, you know, the MVP had to be in one of the top three teams. 5 to 10 years ago, you had to have like a winning record to be a starter in the All-Star team, and we've just given up on everything. It's just whoever has the highest stats, it doesn't matter. That's it. Dominique Williams should have won like 5 MVPs based on the way everything is now. If you're a starting All-Star, could you be a 500 team? Is that much to ask? Is that so hard?
Well, by the time the All-Star game rolls around, the Thunder very well might be above 500.
Well, I'll take back everything I said if they are above 500 when the All-Star game happens. You should come off the bench if you're below 500. I think that's a very low bar.
I just think it's – I just don't think they're going to. I think they're all in now and saying like, okay, SGA is at this level. Giddey has shown that he's at a certain level. I think it's time to just – like, I'm exaggerating slightly whenever I say I think that we might be watching them in the playoffs. I do think they're going to make the play-in game, but they're going to be in the lottery. Now, an ideal scenario, which is not all that – you know, wouldn't be that surprising to see – as if they wind up facing off against the Clippers in one of those play-in games and have a chance to knock the Clippers into the lottery, who, of course, they have their draft pick again. And last year's pick wound up being Jalen Williams. Anyway, so I think before the season started, I was hearing a lot of people, whenever they were talking about their NBA League Pass rankings, talk about, you know, put the Thunder on there. Chet gets hurt. That's changed a little bit. I think if you tune in to watch the Thunder, they are absolutely one of the most fun teams to watch this year in the NBA.
I mean, the 11th team in the West, that's can't miss basketball right there, baby. I can't miss them. Two games below 500. Let's fire up League Pass. Do you have any more? This is just so off the rails hilarious. It's amazing.
No, we can conclude tokens for your pillbox right there, bud.
All right. No, I loved it. I'd love to see like your inner kind of Sal Payne Knick fan emerge, because the Thunder are two games below 500 and the 11th seed in an extremely weak West. That's great. I want to talk about the Hawks. So the Hawks have been surging, you might say. They're in a 3-game win streak here, but everybody's kind of been talking about their struggles all season. And I came across something that I wanted to read to you. So, this was reported behind a paywall on like a local Atlanta newspaper, and I'll read you just the text that has been posted to Reddit. The relationship between Schlenk and Young has deteriorated over recent months. Issues began following game 2 of the playoff series against the Miami Heat last year. In the return to Atlanta, Young chartered a private flight and did not inform the team, according to several people familiar with the situation. In the middle of the playoffs, Young was fined. There have also been issues with head coach Nate McMillan, who, according to several people familiar with the situation, has tried to step down this season. I just wanted to run this by you, the plane situation.
Wait, sorry, just a question on wording. He's tried to step down?
That's what it says. So I can't even cite this writer because it's behind the paywall. So I apologize for that. I can't get any more of this text because I'm not paying to see this Atlanta newspaper.
Because that's... if true, that's amazing. I want to imagine that scenario here for just a second. Like, he goes into Schlenk's office, like, offers his resignation, and Schlenk says no. And McMillan says, oh, okay, I guess not.
This is like when a student tries to drop your class, and you try and convince them, like, no, you're not going to fail.
Yeah.
You just have to turn into one paper more, you know, yeah. I'll give you extra week. Is it this type of thing?
Yeah.
Except it's not a 19-year-old kid. It's a 55-year-old man.
Oh, man. He tried to step down.
He tried, according to several people. This plane thing seems pretty bad to me, that it's in the middle of a playoff series. Now, it's unclear to me by the wording if this is like – okay, so yeah, no, it is. Following game 2, so in the return to Atlanta, like in the middle of a playoff series, he's chartering his own private flight away from the team. That seems pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, like I've said with Russell Westbrook, I have a complicated relationship with him as a Thunder fan. I also have a complicated relationship with Trae Young. He's from Norman, my hometown. Played at OU for 1 year. That 1 year that he played at OU, it was an absolute disaster. They got hot. He became the sensation of the season by like mid-December. Oklahoma shot up to like top 5 in the top 25. And it just absolutely crumbled from there. He's taking horrendous shots. Despite his court vision, he has amazing court vision, but he also takes some of the worst shots imaginable, which is, you know, sounds contradictory, but it's just not. It's just sort of like, you know, what makes part of what makes him a complex player. After that season, like literally, I'm not exaggerating when I say the entire team either transferred or graduated, and they had to start from scratch at OU the year following that because everybody just had such a miserable year playing with him. I want him to be a successful NBA player. I think he's so much fun as an NBA villain, but I think no matter what team he plays on, that team is going to have chemistry issues. And we've seen this for years now with John Collins. John Collins has been on the trading block for years. Nobody wants him. Him and Trae Young are sort of like sniped at each other. And I think that's going to be the story that follows Trae Young around is like, you're automatically starting off from a point of weakness on the defensive end if he's your best player. And I'm afraid that there's going to be continuous chemistry issues with him no matter what.
Well, you've set up my segment beautifully. I'm going to name the next two questions. Is Trae Young valid? No! which you may remember from Bing Bong a year and a half ago. So first question, I think you answered this one. Would you want your team to trade for Trae?
My team? No, absolutely not. I want him nowhere near the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm trying to think if, like, what's another, like, small market team that I might be a fan of? Where's he fitting right now? Because you don't want him in Detroit. I don't think you don't want him in Orlando.
Definitely not Orlando, right? So we're talking, Washington?
Yeah.
Not Charlotte. Charlotte wouldn't want Charlotte. Him.
Yeah,
maybe Toronto. But I know. I guess not. I mean, not. Unless, I mean, if you're blowing up what they have, it really doesn't make sense to bring in Trae. And with the guys they have, it really doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and then just like does he actually like fit in Houston with what they're doing? I mean, I'm being semi facetious, just as like a jab at Houston that seems like cultureless, and it's just like let's just assemble all these young players together. Currently lost 11 games in a row. I don't know. It's just like one of those weird things where he's like a superstar in the league, much like Russell Westbrook and nobody. I mean, Russell Westbrook a couple years ago. And does anybody want him outside of his current team?
Well, that begs the question. Is he a superstar? Because if we can't even find a team that he would fit on, because I'd agree. I think it's the Rockets, Spurs. Maybe you could talk me into the Wolves, but it would be pretty hard to actually pull that off just looking at the contracts. Yeah. Like, that's about it, like, in terms of landing spots for him. And Russell Westbrook, I mean, when Russell Westbrook was Trae's age, teams would kill to get Russell Westbrook. We're really talking about, like, a broken down Russell Westbrook, and we all knew he wasn't going to age amazingly well just based on his game and how hard he played and how much of a high effort player he was. Trae Young is not that. My second question then was, what's his destiny in the NBA? You know, player comp. I've kind of always had him in a similar place, like a sub Allen Iverson with Steph Curry shooting. Like, I think that's where he's at. And if that's your guy with that usage rate, I don't know. I mean, he might be closer to Nate Robinson. Like, that might be his NBA destiny, is like that type of, I come off the bench, I'm a spark plug. He's not going to want to hear that, and we're not there yet, but like, that's actually the best usage of what he does in the NBA.
Well, it is interesting, right, where I think people see the way that he plays, the Steph Curry comp has always been there, but the reality is he's not nearly as good of a shooter as Steph, right?
No.
So he's smaller. He's a worse defender. Like, I think Steph is actually like a little bit underrated as a defensive player. Like, there's no way to value. There's zero value with Trae as a defensive player. And he's not actually that good of a shooter statistically, despite some of the insane shots that you continuously see him taking. It's just like, you knew with the DeJounte Murray trade, they were all in with Trae as their sort of like, you know, centerpiece superstar of their team. I thought, as mentioned at the beginning of the year, right, they were one of my most interesting teams to watch because of that trade they made. Big DeJounte Murray fan. I thought that's like, if you're going to make it work with Trae, and we're saying this about a team that made the Eastern Conference Finals, right, just a couple of years ago, although that's obviously looking more and more fluky. But if you're going to have Trae as your centerpiece, DeJounte Murray was the absolute perfect guard to pair him with. And I think DeJounte Murray has been good. Now, he's an imperfect player, but what he offers his skill set, with his skill set, is a really nice balance to Trey. And they're just right exactly in the same place that they were last year.
Also, we don't need to spend too much more time on this, but like when people say like, oh, they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. They did. It can't be taken away from them. But let's remember that was a COVID year. The Knicks were only the 4 seed because their guys were healthy all year and didn't get COVID.
Yeah.
So even I will admit, that's the only reason they were the 4 seed. They then played Philly, who had to have an all-time meltdown from Ben Simmons to the point where the guy didn't play for months and months and months after that. And the coach was calling him out after the game for them to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. So let's just be clear. Like, yeah, they got in. But I think you're right. It's very fluky. It's very fluky. And I think if you run that team into like any other playoff kind of scenario from the past 5 years or the next 5 years, they're probably not getting to the Eastern Conference Finals or even sniffing them, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
All right, you want to move off Atlanta?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so we kind of set it up a little earlier in the pod, but the Suns are not they don't look so good.
They don't look so good.
They don't. They're 1-9. They're 3 games below 500. They're the 12th seed. They're half a game behind your Oklahoma City Thunder. Here's my question for you, Jeff. Now, I mean, we don't know when Booker's coming back. That's the real problem. They're missing CP3 as well, but we have no idea when Booker's coming back. If you're this front office, and you know, like, okay, it's going to be tough for us to get the 8 seed. You know, like, that's what we're really talking about now. In which case, you're going to have to run into the Nuggets. At best, you're probably playing the Grizzlies or Pelicans. Like, they're not getting above that. And even just making it into that 8 seed is going to be tough. Knowing the kind of generational prospects that are on the board, what do you do as the front office? Do you just hold steady? Do you try and actually sell at the deadline here? You know, Jay Crowder... He's an expiring. What would you do?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, this gets back to like sort of like the bizarre current standings of the West, right? Where Utah, Minnesota, Portland, these are the 8 through 10 teams. What the hell is going to happen with these teams, right? Like, surely Lauri Markkanen's getting traded by the trade deadline, right? I mean, like, everybody still thinks that Danny Ainge is going to continue to dismantle this team, right? I mean, he's not somebody you center your team around. I think the Jazz are destined to drop. How dysfunctional is it going to get in Minnesota? And what's going to happen to Portland, right? All it is another, like, you know, doesn't even need a serious injury to Dame, but another, like, you know, 1 to 2 injuries of the, you know, minor injuries that he's already had this year. And who knows what's going to happen to that team. So by the same token, right, if everything holds steady, Thunder continue to improve. Say Anthony Davis comes back, stays healthy. Maybe the Lakers do get better. It's not inconceivable that you could be looking at the 7th or 8th pick in the NBA draft. And given Chris Paul's status, right, that might be the best thing for your franchise. I think it's really, really hard for teams to make that big of a switch whenever last year, going into the playoffs, we were talking about them as potentially a historic NBA champion, right, if they were going to, like, see it through to the end, right? We were talking, like, all the 2013-2014 Spurs comps were being thrown around left and right. Right. And they have that historic loss in Game 7 of the second round of the Dallas Mavericks. And now here we are. Everybody was predicting that they were going to have a rough start. They actually started off the season really well. But now, as you pointed out, they're 1-9 in their last 10 and 12th in the West. And we are over halfway through the season, right? I don't know if a lot of people realize that. We're over halfway through the season. So I don't know. I think it would be really, really easy for them to just sort of like hold steady where they are and shoot for that lottery pick.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what they should do. I don't think they should make any major shakeups, but I would be in no rush whatsoever to bring Booker back. And if you want to tell me he's sitting out the season, I think that's totally fine. So if that's the case, they've got 8 expirants. Like, that's the thing. Like, next year, they only have 6 guys like on the roster committed. So I would say, like, they're 1-9 right now. How much worse can you get? Like, you don't really need to. There's nobody you really need to get rid of. But what I would say, in terms of if you're trying to drop it for seeding, or for ping pong balls, but what I would say is, like, if you can get anything for Jay Crowder, Sarge, any of those guys. Bismack Biyombo, you know, somebody dumb enough to think like, yeah, we can, we'll give up a second rounder to get Bismack Biyombo. Anything you could get, I think they should be open to. You know, that's what I would do if I was this team. And like, that's probably a tough pill to swallow for Phoenix. But like, hey, the way the odds are now, you can jump up, you know, and that we could be looking at this in 6 months, and it's like the Tim Duncan year, you know, with the Spurs. We're like, oh.
Absolutely.
You know, Robinson went down. It was a crazy thing that happened. Then they got Tim Duncan. Now you could pair someone with Devin Booker, and we're good to go. So I would definitely aim much more towards ping pong balls at this point than trying to sneak up into that 10 seed or the 8 seed and kind of run into Denver, which I don't think would be so great for them right now.
Yeah, right. Zero value in that. And by the time we get into the thick of the season, I always sort of forget like the stats floating around about the lottery. But I think it's that every year since they've adjusted the odds, the team with the seventh, right, the team in the seventh slot has jumped into the top four, I believe, is the stat there. And obviously, like the Zion year, I think the Pelicans had the eighth or ninth best odds, right? And they wind up at one. And that same year, the Grizzlies wind up with two, and that's how they get Ja. And they were also somewhere in that 6, 7, 8 range, right? Yeah, so, I mean, and believe me, thought about this with the Thunder as well. But I think that the Phoenix Suns, right, given the status of Chris Paul, Booker and Ayton are not enough to get it done on their own right now. Maybe with this new ownership change, maybe they're going to be, you know, this free agent destination. The player, you know, players love that kind of climate. They love the climate there in Phoenix. If they have an owner finally who's willing to spend some money, maybe they just believe in the free agency route over the draft. But it certainly seems like this is a prime opportunity staring them in the face. If they just want to say like, hey, this year didn't go the way that we want, it's time to start thinking about the future.
Yeah, and it's okay to punt when injuries make you punt, you know? So it's not like they opted into this. They didn't try and do this at the start of the season. I do think fans are more forgiving of that. Like, what are they supposed to do? Like, this, you know, it's injuries. And this is what happens when you have Chris Paul on your team and it's, you know, year three or four. Can we go to someplace totally different?
Let's do it, Sal.
All right, this is a tale of two centers, Jeff. we're going to do something I know you hate when I do player A, player B comp, and then reveal who it is. So we got center A, center B. This has nothing to do with the Knicks, which might shock you. So we'll take the Knicks off the board. All right, center A is a 30-year-old center. Center B is 21. I'm going to give you their per 100 ratings. Center A, the 30-year-old, his offensive rating, his O rating is 128. His defensive rating is 109. The 21-year-old center, his O rating is 139 and his defensive rating is 110. So obviously pretty big advantage there for center number two, correct?
Yes.
All right. Per 36 is almost identical. So center A, he's averaging 15.7 points a game. Center B, 13.6. Assists are around one. Blocks, the younger center's winning. It's 3.6 to 1.5. I think that's, rebounds are about, 13 to 13, about the same. So per 36, about the same. Now, totals is where we get into a slight difference. But I want to be clear, center A, the older one, is playing way more minutes. So he's already played 1,100 minutes. The other player has played 800 minutes this season. So it's a big difference. So the center A is averaging 30 minutes a game. Center B is averaging 19 minutes a game. So center A, the older one, he's averaging 13. He's averaging 13 points. He's averaging 11 rebounds, under 1.3 blocks. Center B, he's averaging 7.5 points a game, 7 rebounds, and 2 blocks. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Sal, you lost me. I don't know, like 3 minutes ago in the numbers. Like, I'm such a visual person. Like, I don't even know what you're saying anymore. Okay. I do have one guess. Is the 30-year-old center you're talking about Rudy Gobert?
Wait, hold on. Hold that thought.
Yes.
All right. Even though I got lost in the sea of numbers, I just had a guess. I just had a feeling that's who you're talking about.
And do you know who center number two is?
No, I have no idea.
It's Walker Kessler.
I should have known. I should have been able to put that together. Yeah.
So I don't mean to kick Minnesota sports fans when they're down. You know, I know the Vikings just lost in the playoffs in apparently heartbreaking fashion. I don't know. I wasn't watching.
Sal, you always like crush the Brooklyn Net fan base. I still don't believe there is actually a Timberwolf fan base.
Okay? Well, I got it. So it's so fun. I know I think I've met two Timberwolves fans since I've been here. One was one of my students. One is a coworker at my job. Vikings fans, I've never met one ever. My only Viking fan that I know is my dad. My dad passionately loves the Vikings. He grew up in Scranton. He still lives in Scranton. He's the only Vikings fan I know. So he was asking me this weekend. He's like, is the town in playoff mode? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I didn't even know they're in the playoffs. Like, it's so funny comparing like Pittsburgh or Indianapolis, other places, right, which are such sports towns. Like when the teams are doing well, you know, buses are blaring, like go Steelers, all this, it's everywhere. And like here, there's just nothing. I know more Packers fans, but I don't mean to kick them when I'm down, but man, like, wouldn't you just rather have Walker Kessler than Gobert just straight up at this point?
It is funny. Like, I don't have the stats in front of me, right? But I know that, like, their defensive rating is actually worse this year than it was last year.
Yeah.
Right? And going back to my point about, like, sure, some of that is, like, the talent. They gave up a lot of, like, role-playing talent in that trade. But I also think it's just, like, gets back to the chemistry issues, right? I think it's another example of, like, things are not working right. Because I admit, I hated this trade, or I loved it through in a tragic way, because I thought it was hilarious. So in that way, I loved it, but I thought it was an awful trade. But that's primarily because I didn't think it was going to lead to playoff success. I actually thought that they would be good in the regular season, you know, at least in like the, you know, 4-5, maybe 3 range in the Western Conference standings. I did not see it going this badly, and you know, Cat has missed a ton of time, but I gotta say, I don't see it turning around anytime soon.
No, I mean, it's really funny because we were both very down on the trade when the trade happened. Like you said, we weren't down on it enough, like, because we both, right, as you said, thought, okay, well, at least for this year and probably the next year, they're gonna make the playoffs for sure, and they're gonna maybe be in that 4 spot. And like, man, it just does not look good. And yeah, I think they're far closer to missing the play-in than they are to being a top 4, even in the 4-5-6 range at all.
Yeah.
You know, so, and now you talked about all the role players they had to give up, but let's not forget the bevy of picks that they've given up. So we haven't seen a major trade since this has happened, like a major superstar trade. And I'm really interested to see how their failure will affect the market going forward, because they gave up so much for Gobert. I can't wait to see, like, when finally a big player comes off the board next, how much is given up in comparison to this Wolves deal. And obviously, I'm interested in that as a Knicks fan, knowing that they're holding on to their bevy of picks.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is why I'm so happy the Knicks did not trade for Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, and that was after the Gobert trade, right?
But the thing. It's like, so then the Gobert trade inflated that market, you know?
Okay, I don't know, though. See, because, like, I just don't think Rudy Gobert is going to have any bearing on, say, like, just a superstar who has been thrown around all the time as, like, a young wing. Like, Rudy Gobert would have zero impact on a trade if the Thunder decided to trade Shea, right? Teams aren't thinking about Rudy Gobert. They're thinking about what they're possibly going to get in a wing of that caliber. Right, I just think it's like a unique situation, the Rudy Gobert deal.
Well, I know, I'm talking for trading for like a 30 to 28 year old player, you know. Uh-huh. So like the type of move that you're going to make when we're like, we're going all in, we're going all in right now. Like how does that shake out? What they paid versus what the next team will pay?
Yeah, I just think it's going to be contextual with every GM, every market, every situation. Right? How desperate are they? I don't know. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see like what kind of packages teams get for these major trades.
Well, speaking of the Knicks. We are New York and we love basketball. We're gonna take it up. Jeff, just want to give you a little bit right now. You know, last time, you know, everybody was like, oh, God, Donovan Mitchell is so great. Oh, God, you really screwed it up. You know, and you want to come here and talk about that. And I've been steadfast the whole time. Do you know who the player of the week is in the East, bud?
I do not.
Well, guess what? His name is Jalen Brunson, and he plays for your New York Knickerbockers. Here's what he's averaging. 34.8 points a game, 5.8 rebounds a game, 5 assists a game. This dude is lights out. The Knicks might have 2 All-Stars this year. I don't think they're going to get there, but they certainly they're in conversation. They are firmly in that 6th seed right now, which is what I was on about last time.
One game ahead of the 7th seed, firmly entrenched, one game ahead.
That's firmly, baby. One game ahead. I am thrilled. Yesterday they lost in a heartbreaker in overtime to the Toronto Raptors, but it was second game of a back-to-back, so you can't really fault them. Both afternoon starts, those are always wonky on the weekends. You know how it is. So I'm just so thrilled with the Knicks. So happy they didn't trade for Donovan Mitchell. And remember when you were here and you're like, oh, think of how much better they'd be if they traded for Donovan Mitchell. Well, guess what, guy? They're 25-20. The Cavs are 28-17, and the Knicks didn't give up shit. They just signed their guy in the offseason. So this is exactly what I've been saying forever. Don't give up everything. Get good, get in this range, get respectable, and start signing guys because you're in New York. I am excited. So when they go all in with the picks, they've got the treasure chest loaded up. I'm pumped, baby.
So it feels like they've had the treasure chest loaded up for, I don't know, like a decade now? Like who's
No. They had absolutely nothing in like 2010. Well, then they gave up everything like in the Bargnani trade, which was 10 years ago today, like 10 years ago, a little under 10 years ago, because it was the summer of 2013. So they had to crawl out of their hole, that their self-made hole, you know, admittedly.
Okay.
So, but
all the treasure chest is not heard that. Rumor after rumor, year after year, about the next superstar coming to New York, and I'm still waiting to hear. I'm still waiting to see that next.
Yeah, he's there. His name is Jalen Brunson. He is the player of the week in the East. They got him, and they didn't have to give up shit. They only refilled that treasure chest when they trade Kristaps. That's when they
hang
refilled
that banner, baby. Hang that banner, hey. Player of the week in the East.
Winning the dunk contest for Obi Toppin, player of the East or player of the week in the East. These are the two best things that have happened to the Knicks. And the playoffs. Don't forget we made the playoffs and we won
making
a game.
The playoffs.
We won one game in the playoffs. And I'll tell you what, I called you Nick. I'm so excited. Jeff, because we're talking about the Knicks. Put it on wax right now. I guarantee you the Knicks will win more playoff games this year than last year.
Then last year, they didn't make the playoffs last year.
Hell yeah, baby.
Sal, do you realize that if the playoffs started today, they'd be playing the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round?
Think
they're
I like their chances.
You think they're winning?
I like their chances against the Bucks. You know, I think they can win 2. I think maybe 3. You know, if the Bucks are coming in without Middleton, you know, like the Bucks don't look so good either, buddy. You know their like second best offensive player might be? Big Balls Joe Ingles. So bring on Milwaukee, buddy. Bring on Milwaukee. I'm all full of piss and vinegar right now. Just
so,
all in on this Knicks
team. What kind of bet can I reel you into about this potential like Bucks Knicks series? So like how much are you willing to bet that the Knicks don't win 3 games against the Bucks or win?
Well, I'm not going 3 games. I would go 2. I would take 2 in a bet.
Okay, we might have to revisit that.
So I'd set 1.5 is the line for wins in a Knicks-Bucks series, with the Bucks obviously will have home court.
Yes.
All right, not taking that bet, so you think they're going
to
win too?
We'll come back to it. We'll come back to it.
All right, we'll see you in April. Well, Jeff, I got another thing for you here.
All right.
My favorite part of the show, it's magic, you know. Jeff, this is a great one. At Magic Johnson, 4:48 p.m., January 26, 2023, 1.6 million views. Only 4,000 likes, though. What a wild and exciting NFL wildcard weekend. The Jaguars came back from a 27-point deficit to win their game, and the Giants upset the Vikings. All right, Jeff, on a scale of 1 to 5 magics, how many magics are you giving this magic
to? Sal, this is the full magic. I mean, this is like exactly the kind of thing that you would try and make up. If you're trying to describe to somebody what the Magic Johnson on Twitter experience is, this is the exact tweet that you would come up with. Because all he did was summarize things that happened. It's perfect that it's in another sport, too.
Yeah.
The most watched sport in this country, you know, is like moving into the playoffs. And he just summarized what happened in 2 games. for people, it's amazing. It's the full magic.
All right, the only quibble I'll give you is this. Wild and exciting is a smidge of an analysis. Do you know, like, you would that is something like you were deciding. Like, if it was just like this was the NFL wildcard weekend, I would really love that. It right. was NFL wildcard weekend. So I think I'll go for, you know, I'm giving it the full magic. Let's give it. This is pretty, I mean, because otherwise this is perfect. I saw this. Normally I got to search through them. It was the first thing I saw. Burst out laughing. Incredible tweet. The first response is from Pro Football Reference, and it just says, can confirm.
That's perfect, right? Because that's the way he treats Twitter, right? It's like he's treats it like he's a journalist breaking news, right? Because he's so afraid of inserting any kind of opinion and not being liked, universally liked, right?
So great. It's so great. I hope that what's that show called? The Lakers show in the 80s that we were watching?
Oh, yeah. Winning Time.
Yeah, Winning Time. I hope somehow, you know, just set it now just so we can get to see him making these tweets or if his assistant is typing up these tweets.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, have we covered everything today?
I think so, Sal.
You want to hit that fast break, baby?
Let's do it.
This is the part of the show where I come up with something that's going to annoy Jeff, but I'm telling you, it might annoy Jeff. You've said some cross things about this player recently, so maybe this will maybe this will actually annoy you, but then it'll come around. It's going to be like a boomerang today, baby. Jeff, I know you love when I read stat lines at you. I know.
Oh, yeah, it's my favorite.
I got one for you. LeBron. Since turning 38 years old, averaging 37 points per game, 9.7 rebounds per game, 8.6 assists per game. He's leading the league in points, rebounds, and assists per game during that stretch. How you feeling about your boy? The protagonist of the NBA is back.
Sal, as I said last time, I don't care. Like, he can have all these amazing stat games that he wants. It doesn't matter. I've been saying it for years. He's learned how to game the system in the NBA, which is impressive. Listen, it's impressive that he's as old as he is doing what he is, but it doesn't mean shit, right? It's just stats. That's all it is. He's accumulating stats, and they're not going to be in the playoffs once again, despite having Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook on their team.
I hope and pray they make the playoffs, just the playing game. Just so we can see the locker room shot of LeBron reading The Godfather right before the game, or something like that. It was so amazing. Or him just tweeting Zero Dark 30, yes. You know, for the 12 hours when he's in a game. That matters. Would be so great. Jeff, here's my fast break question for this week. It's humble brag time, buddy. What are you doing well since you turned 38? Are you 39 now? Or are you
39?
Still...
I'm approaching 40, bud.
Oh, baby. So yeah, I just turned 38 a couple months ago. So, you know, I'm wildly impressed that LeBron is doing this at age 38. So what have you been doing well since you turned 38? I'll go first to give you time to think. Cause you know, what stood out to me about this is I mostly think of myself in decline.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, I wake up and I'm like, well, all my functionality is a little worse than it was yesterday. And that's just how it's going to be until I die at this point. But I'm going to tell you what I'm doing well since I turned 38. Jeff, you might know I've struggled to really introduce and stay with a workout plan consistently through much of my adulthood. So I will introduce something, and I'll do it for, like, you know, a couple months and kind of get bored and stop. Some things are more successful than others. You know, when I walked this lake for 1.5 miles, like, every day for, like, 2 years, you know, and then stopping when it gets cold. I'll probably start again once it gets warm. I just stop once it gets freezing here. But, you know, I remember one time he laughed at me because I was on the treadmill. I was like, my new thing is I get on the treadmill and I play a video game. That didn't work for Jeff. And it didn't work for me because I tripped like 3 times and almost bashed my face because I was looking at a screen, and I'm also like wildly clumsy, you know, so, you know, it didn't really stick. But Jeff, I think I found something. I feel like the 4-time divorcee lady with like a white spritzer who's in the Arizona suburbs, and it's like, this time I found it. I got it. I'm gonna make it work. I got an exercise bike like maybe 5 months ago. I've used it pretty much every day since that point. I ride about 12 miles a day now.
Do you play video games while you're on the exercise bike?
Well, I don't want to fall off the bike, Jeff. I don't want to fall off the bike. So I thought about it multiple times. I'm like, I could probably play video games on this because at least now I'm sitting. But I'm not playing video games on it. Jeff, you know what I'm doing while I'm on that bike?
What are you doing?
I'm watching a movie. So this has been the secret sauce. I just set the bike. The bike is one of these collapsible fold-up bikes. Put the bike in front of the TV. I get my free weights. I just get on that bike. I just watch a movie. I watch the first half of a movie. Then, you know, the next day I watch the second half of the movie. It's been great. Make a little schedule for myself. Here's my movies. Good to go. This has been the secret sauce for me. Watched a ton of movies. Just watching a ton. Right now I'm working through Fernando DiLeo's selection on Criterion of his 1970s police crime thrillers.
All right.
That's my little workout tip, Jeff.
All right. Thanks for the tip, bud. I don't know. So things that I've improved at since turning 38. This is a tough one, Sal.
Or what are you doing well?
Right.
That's how I phrased it.
Okay, like, what are you doing well since turning 38? A couple things come to mind. One, I've gotten pretty good at giving a cat with severe heart disease his medicine. How about that? It's difficult. He requires 4 different kinds of medicine. Some of them are liquid that you get in a syringe and squirt it down his throat. Unfortunately, one of the main ones is a pill that he is not fond of taking, so you kind of have to like shove it down his throat. But it's for his own good, right? As much as he might hate the idea of it. And I gotta say, I've gotten pretty good at that the last couple of years.
Do you put the pill in when he's sleeping? Like wait for him to sleep and then just slide that up in there?
Oh, no. You have to like turn him over. Like you have to hold him at like a baby.
Oh man.
And yeah, really force it in. Yeah. Otherwise it's not happening.
Wow. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you how your cat was doing multiple times, but I was kind of afraid after
right.
how it was at the end of the trip. So yeah. Like, bear. But I'm glad to hear he's doing well.
That 4th medication that's been added is just doing wonders, and he's he's rolling right along.
He's just loving Reno, loving life.
Exactly.
Well, I love that we both in our late 30s became cat boys.
Yes. It's both happened on our vacation from the pod, right? Which wasn't planned at all, but it's just something that, a little magic detour that happened.
Well, what a heartfelt end of the show. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play. I don't even think these platforms exist anymore that we used to talk about at the start of the show. I don't know where people listen. I just use the Google podcast app that I have. No one calls that Google Play. I don't know what this stuff is. I mean, I know it's going out somewhere. I mean, it's, you know, you listen to it. Thank you for listening. Geb, you want to shout something out to the people?
Sal, I've got some appointment viewing for you. Friday night, 7 Pacific. So what is that? 9 Central for you. Thunder at the Kings. Most exciting game of the year?
26 years on the line. Nobody ever busted me 4 grades before.
Welcome to the last show of their lives, the final show. Tonight, no pressure. They end their show with their gangly necks in the clouds. They end the show on a high note. Thanks for all the years. Thanks for all the memories, Jab Steps. Never to return. Happy 500th anniversary, Jab Steps. We'll miss you. See you next week.
Perfectly executed jab step.